Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hello one and all, and welcome to Behind the Glass, your weekly automotive podcast hosted by two rather uninformed enthusiasts.
Nah.
I'm Sam from the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass.
I'm Tony from Gravelwood Car Sales.
And you can watch us each week on YouTube. You can also listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and most podcast players. We hope you enjoy the episode. How good is the GT3?
Unbelievable.
So, essentially, we've both, in the last 3 to 4 days, been on road trips in our GT3s.
Yeah.
You through Spain, me on the podium tours rally to the Nürburgring. And we've spoken a bit on WhatsApp. We've been a bit overexcited and been like, oh my God, how good are these cars?
I mean, we already knew anyway.
I'd forgotten.
Okay, fair.
Because I knew how good that car is, but it's been a while since I've really driven a 992 GT3 in anger in the dry.
Yeah.
Because it was probably when I drove the press car, the Porsche GB press car in Wales, and fell in love with that thing and texted, like, I need one of these things.
And that's another thing as well. You drove it in the wrong country.
Well, no, Wales is good, mate.
No, but the roads, they're not. It's not the same, mate. Like driving a car in Europe and driving them in the UK is not the same.
Certain parts of Europe. Driving the cars in Spain, France, Switzerland.
Yeah, fair.
You know,
Portugal.
Luxembourg,
yeah,
Germany.
Yeah,
lots
yeah.
of parts, to be fair.
Most of Europe.
Where in the UK, it's like the north of Wales is all right. So you're not wrong. But yeah, on my trip, it was the first time I've really pushed on in anger. And the thing just, it blew me away. And you've been teasing me with the fact that you've also been having a good week. So we're going to dive into it. I think like probably the majority of this episode, which is coming to you from this random hotel room in Spain, is going to be about our GT3s. But let's elongate that, or let's spread that out by talking about both of our trips in general.
Yeah, go on.
Because lots of interesting stuff happens. So coming to you first.
Yeah, well, there's also a lot of interesting comparisons because you have a manual and I have a PDK.
Absolutely.
So
annoying that we aren't on the same trip, though.
The same cars, but very different. They are different.
Has yours got a cage?
Of course, yeah.
And what tyres are you on?
I'm on the Goodyears, which I was actually, when I got the car, because I've only had the car 3 weeks, when I got the car, I thought, oh, I'm going to put Michelin's on. But actually, I can't tell the difference.
Do you know which Goodyear?
Well, they're the semi-slick one.
No, you don't know the name. No, I don't. I'm not familiar with my Goodyear tyre range.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, go Goodyear. It's not a tyre that you hear a lot about for the GT3.
Yeah.
Clearly you've had a good time. So yeah, tell us, what are the other cars on your rally and give a bit more. I know you don't really know where you've been, but give us a rough idea of where you think you've been over the last few days.
So I can tell you where we started and I can tell you where we are now and I can tell you where we're finishing.
Great, do that.
So we started kind of south of Marbella. I'm just thinking, which is south or north? Very near Gibraltar,
about
20 minutes from Gibraltar.
Like down towards Seville, like that far?
No, not that far down. Okay. Not that far down. In a hotel, in the middle of nowhere.
Sure.
And then we go literally at the hotel straight on lovely roads.
And I know that this is your thing with your road trips. You basically just do really nice road. You avoid motorways like the plague, right?
At all costs. Very, very rarely we have to do a 15 or 20 minute drive on a motorway to get to the next bit. But that's happened in the whole tour. That's happened twice. So yeah, we've literally driven all the way here on mountain roads,
twisty passes.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
I'm jealous. That sounds amazing. Yeah. Okay, so yeah, we're now in Lleida.
Yeah,
which neither of us have been to before, and is a little bit of a nondescript.
No, I was here last year.
Oh, were you?
I've been here last year. Yeah.
So when I said, "What do you think of Lleida?" You're like, "Where are we? What's this place called?"
No, I stayed in this hotel last year.
Okay, well, this is Lleida, Tony.
Right, okay.
Next time somebody says, where did you stay? You get Lleida.
Right.
And it is, I think it's just north of Barcelona. Yeah. So are you finishing in Barcelona? Where'd you finish?
So we finish up in the hills about 2 hours from Barcelona. So
oh, wow.
We're going up a little bit.
Well, that's what I just did today.
So that's probably where we're going.
So I did that today, but not in the GT3 because I've switched cars since my road trip. I'm now in my 360 heading to Morocco.
Yeah.
And because of the changes we did to that car, I spent most of today's drive going, oh, I wish I was in the GT3.
Yeah. And the variations of roads that we've done. I mean, so what you've done today are probably all like twisty roads, aren't they?
Proper mountainish passes.
Yeah, that's definitely what we're going to do tomorrow.
Fine.
But the variation of roads that we've done this week have been all sorts, mate. In big sweeping roads, twisty roads. Because there's not that, it's not like the Alps here, it's not like the French Alps. There's not many mountains, there are mountains obviously, but there's not anywhere near as many as there are in the Alps. So there's a real selection of roads, which is good because it's not the same roads all the time. There's a real selection of roads. And what always blows my mind about Spain is that there's no cars.
You don't see anyone.
You don't see
no one. So much of the country is abandoned.
Abandoned. The roads are like carpets. Mm. Like amazing. No potholes. Lovely and smooth. They always look new. But actually, they're probably not new. Just no one drives on them.
Yeah, they're probably done 20 years ago. But you're the first car to go on it.
Yeah, literally.
So hold on a sec. Do you have a preference of road type? I know you said that the variation is what you like, but over the last 5 days with the GT3, have you got to it and gone, oh, actually, this is I'm looking forward to the next sweepy section or the next twisty section?
Yeah, so the GT3 in general is more suited to twisty stuff because of it's not a power car, it's a handling car, basically. And the twisty stuff, the other cars that are with me, they're more powerful, so you know, they sort of eat the road up a lot easier. So, for instance, like the pista on the big sweeping stuff is miles better than the GT3.
Yeah, of course. No, yeah. I experienced too. Like the GT3. Hey, look, it's not a slow car.
No.
Absolutely gets up and goes, and you can carry a lot of speed in that thing on big sweepers.
It won't let go.
Lines. Yeah. Fantastic. But yeah, where it really shines through, and I think what I was craving on my trip was a twisty road where I can really just like attack the corners.
Yeah.
And cornering speed is what makes that car just come to life.
Yeah, because
even if you throw it in at what you think is 10/10, the car's like, easy.
Yeah, it's the front end grip. It's got, obviously I've had all the GT cars and the front end grip on this 992 GT3 is like unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
It's better than the GT2. It's miles better. And there's a GT2 on the trip. So
we've had 991 GT2 RS.
991 GT2 RS, three SF90s.
Wow.
And me. So,
wow. Okay. Yeah.
So I'm easily, on power, easily the slowest car.
But definitely the most aggressive driver. Oh, wow. If that's not an immediate yes, I'm quite terrified about your group.
There's three or four of us that are all fairly aggressive. And the
if
other
any
two
of the others had come in a GT3, would they have been able to keep up the way that you have this week?
Yeah.
He's only saying that because we've got to have dinner with them all after this. And he knows I'm going to absolutely land in it. But that's quite a big feat to mix with three SF90s and a GT2 RS in a natural aspirated GT3.
A car half the power.
Half the power. Yeah. That's a big task. I know in the real twisties, you're going to have an advantage over the SF90s, at least in terms
of
weight and dynamics. But still, I mean...
Yeah, I mean, and the twisty stuff, it's way better than the SF90s. And better than the GT2 RS as well.
Really?
Yeah, because those of you know GT3s, and you'll know this, you can get on the power in a GT3 halfway around the corner.
Yeah,
like you literally tip the front in on the brakes and then literally stamp on the accelerator and it just drives around. When I say stamp on the accelerator, I mean ping the accelerator. If you do that in a GT2, you're in a wall.
Fair. Okay.
You can't do that. You've got to straighten the car back up.
You've got to wait.
Same with the SF90.
Fair. So it's kind of the perfect poise of balance and handling and chassis. And I don't want to skip to my trip quite yet, but that's what I found is that's what I had totally underestimated and forgotten was that, you're kind of... I mean, the corners are just almost like a non-event. Like you just, as you say, you turn in and you power and you're just gone. You're just gone. Like this, you really notice it more than ever when you're driving with other cars.
More than, you're absolutely right, yeah.
It's rewarding when you're alone, absolutely. But when you're following what are other fast cars, and my group, which we'll get into later, had a whole variety of everything from Civic Type Rs right up to GT4s and McLaren 600LTs and Huracan Performantes.
Yeah.
But I felt like I was just cornering at speeds way higher than
you
any of those cars could have been able to do. Yeah, it was nuts.
It's I can't really think of a better car that goes around the corner that I've driven. Even the Pista, I can't think really of a better car that goes around the corner than the GT3. I still think the Pista is a faster car, for sure it will be because of the power of the car. But to get the front end in, a road car I'm talking about. I'm not talking about racing car. I'm talking about road car. It is fantastic the way it turns.
I mean, it sort of almost makes me think, God knows what the new 3 RS is going to be like if you ever wanted to drive it on the road. But so for sure, it's been impressive. Has it been more impressive than you were expecting? Because you've been a bit on and off with 992 GT3. Don't forget, when it first came out, you were a bit like, I know what it's going to be like. I'm not that excited, like, whatever. It's just a bit better than the last one.
And that's true.
For sure. But now having spent 5 days in it in Spain with your mates, are you now more enamoured by it than you thought you might have been?
Yes and no, because it is doing what I expected it to do, because that is what GT3s do. And I've been a little bit of a cheat because I drove one for a few hours out in Spain last year.
Oh, yes, of course.
My friend had one, so I had driven it in these conditions last year, so I did sort of know what to expect. But when it's your own car, you push a bit harder, and it's your car, you don't really care as much. So I'm not surprised how good it is, and I'm glad it's as good as it is. It's quite amazing.
Have any of the other cars tempted you, though? At any point have you looked and gone, because SF90, we fell in love with the rear of them on the Mille Miglia, or we were intrigued by the rear of them because they kept flying past us. And 2RS, obviously one of your halo cars. So have you spent the week at any point going, oh?
Well, I've driven them all.
You've jumped in and out of all of them?
Jumped in and out of them all, yeah. I drove the 2RS today for a period of time. I drove there's a Spider SF90 and the Coupe, both different, by the way.
I would imagine so, because Ferrari Spiders famously have a bit of flex, don't they?
They do, yeah. So
they're not like the McLaren Tubs that are rock solid. They just tend to sort of float around a bit.
Float around, yeah. So I drove the SF90 and originally the roof was down and I went around a corner and I immediately pulled over and shut the roof.
Yeah, you're
right. Because I thought, no, thank you. And then I drove the Coupe yesterday and I spent a lot of time in the SF90. I spent nearly a day in the convertible and I spent a morning in the Coupe. So I spent quite a lot of time in SF90. So I really got to grips with it. It is a mega thing, that car.
You've always liked it.
It is so far. Like, especially when you jump out the GT3 and it's got no power at all. Although you don't need all that. You don't really need, for the road, you don't really need any more than 500 horsepower. But that SF90 takes the piss how fast it is.
Yeah,
it's a joke. A joke.
Do you feel it, though? Like, when you're getting on it, do you look down and go, oh my God? Like, is it so fast that you actually don't realize how fast you're going?
Well, that's
like,
exactly,
it's like Turbo S.
Yeah, yeah. It's like Turbo S on speed.
Yeah.
Like, it's exactly what
happens. Because Turbo S, to explain it, for at least my experience, nothing happens. You're like dawdling and you look down, you're like, oh, it's 95 miles an hour.
Yeah, or like, more.
Yeah. That's terrifying. Yeah. So that's what the SF90 is like, is it?
Oh, mate, it's like another... And you know the scary thing was... by the end of being in it, I'd almost got used to how fast it was.
Scary.
Which is scary because I was driving it like flat out.
So you like, you end up driving like a complete nutter, do you? Just well, to, you get some,
how,
to get
you know
some to get some
I drive. Yeah.
When I know you drive like a nutter in a Fiesta. But what I mean is like
safely
it,
by the way.
It pushes you on to yeah, extract that speed so that you get some sensation. You don't want, because you could beat almost everything in your field, or at least on my tour, driving that car at 0.5 or 0.4, you would still beat everything.
Yeah.
But obviously that's not rewarding for you as a driver. You're not getting the feeling, the emotion, the connection. So you've got to drive it hard to bond, and at which point, mucho rápido.
You know what I always like is driving all these different cars. They all drive differently. They've all got different characteristics. You have to drive them all differently. Some of them you brake earlier, some of them you brake later, some of them you trail the brakes, sometimes you get on the power early. There's loads of different ways you drive all these different cars. And I love that, figuring out, well, actually, I can't do that in that car because I'm going to crash. Literally.
Hopefully you figure that out pretty quickly.
Yeah, I figured it out before. Yeah. But I can do that in that car. And then the 2RS again was completely different. Like, you can't drive the 2RS. It's very similar in the way it behaves to the 3. Obviously, it's rear engine.
It's a
loads
Porsche.
Of grip, downforce. And you can genuinely, in the GT cars, you can genuinely feel the downforce in the car. More than the SF90, by the way.
Fair. SF90 has that active spoiler, right?
It does,
sort of weird lip. But yeah, those big wings, when you're pushing on, I think important to clarify, because we're often the first to say like downforce on the road means nothing, like it's nothing
depending on how fast you go.
Yeah, I think that's all we'll have
but,
to
but we can't really talk about it.
I think we, as I say, like we'll respectfully allow you to make your own conclusions about the week that Tony's had in those two cars, but yeah, at speed the downforce is noticeable. That's yeah, we'll say that.
But also what I will say is, as well,
HR department, just look into that.
The GT3 at speed feels more planted than even the 2RS.
Really?
It does, yeah.
You think that's a generational thing?
I don't know. I really don't know. Although they are similar, they are very, very different in the way they behave. Like, you'd expect the 2RS to be stupidly fast in a straight line. And it is, of course. And it absolutely eats the ground up. And if the GT3 is in front or behind, the bit that because I was following the GT2 most of the week, and the bit that I couldn't live with was when it finally got its power down and punted out the corner. Okay. I mean, it would just drive away from the GT3.
So you're like right on its bumper the whole way through the corner, then it gets straight and it's gone.
Well, what would happen was I'd have to hang back a bit, because as I go into the corner and out, I'm faster.
Yeah.
Because I'm on the power way before the 2RS. The 2RS can't really get on the power until it's half straight, or at least it can see that it can get on the power. So we're coming out of these hairpins, and he's got to wait, then go. Whereas the 3, I'm halfway round. Like I said, I'm already flat.
Yeah.
So I've got to wait a bit. So the bit that he gains on the straights, I'm braking that. I carry more speed in. I'm on the power. So then I'm right up behind him again. So it's like cat and mouse. That's what it was like all the time. But the real big sweeping corners, the real big fast corners, he would just edge away from me. Not because of the corners, because we'd probably go in corners same speed. It's just the power of it. It's 200 horsepower more. He would just edge away.
You know, when we used to speak about 992 GT3, and then obviously when I announced I was getting one, a lot of people were like, it's just a lot of hype around that car. Like, what's the big deal? Like, I don't get it. Like, what? It really is, and I think I proved it to my group, and I proved it to myself, and it sounds like you proved it to your group and yourself, just the most unbelievable fast road car.
Where the lads that I'm with, they're all petrol heads, and they've all had even more cars than me, all of them. They've all, I can't tell you how many cars they've all had. And we all come to the conclusion this week, because they've all driven the GT3 as well, that for the money, there's nothing better.
Well, this is the thing, right? So let's switch a little bit to my trip, I suppose. My car, I was a variety of things on the on our trip. 25 cars, everything from an old V8 Vantage, Civic Type R, modified Clio, up to, yes, Huracan Performante, 600LT, 570 GT, Challenge Stradale. You know, a real, real range.
Yeah.
And arguably, most people agreed that the Performante, the 600LT, and the GT3 were the kind of top three performance or supercars on the trip.
They would have been, for sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, unfortunately, actually, I drove with the Performante quite a bit. I never got to drive with the LT. Guess why?
Broke down.
Every time we left somewhere, it had an issue.
Yeah.
Bless them. They were the nicest guys in the world. And he'd only bought the car fairly recently. And he had an absolute blast and loved it. But it just had, similar to my 540, he had all those annoying glitches.
Yeah.
Windows not going down, doors not opening. So anyway, let's not get into it because we don't want this.
Which, to be fair, no. But to be fair, I've spent a lot of time with I've driven a 600LT, but I've spent a lot of time on trips over the years with 600LTs, and the 600LT has been the most reliable.
They tend to be fantastic. It's the one that I actually recommend to people. People often message me saying, is it worth getting a McLaren? I say, stretch the 600LT because I've heard they're bulletproof.
Yeah.
So it's quite shocking actually, but price-wise, help me. Where's a Performante these days, Vat, price-wise?
Well, with some miles on, they're probably anything between 180 and 200. I think.
On a used market, those three cars are all similar money, right?
The LT is the cheapest, probably 130, 140.
I think they've come on strong. But okay, fine. So, yeah, really hard to figure out. But essentially, you know, that's an older car. Performance is an older car. I'm in a 2023, nearly 992 GT3. We all just sat back and went, actually, to do what that car can do or has done on this trip, you actually need to be spending $100,000 more, because the Performante and the LT were definitely in that realm, but older. So if you want new, so if you want the Huracan Technica, or if you want the Artura, or if you want the whatever, you're actually spending $100,000 more than that. You're at the 250 mark rather than the 150 mark, which is obviously my car list. I think that's where the GT3 is quite amazing, because it does punch in its ability at that level above.
They have always done that, by the way.
Always have.
They've always, you know, my previous generation GT3s, they've always punched above their weight. It's why they're so in demand, because they don't make enough of them and demand is through the roof for them, which is why they always hold their money. Because they do punch well above their weight for what they are, you know. Like, you comfortably keep up with, you know, supercars with 100, 200 horsepower more, literally just because of the way they are.
Yeah. So I do have a little bit of a confession to make, or actually it's something to discuss. It's not a confession at all. So I set that up really wrongly. You're now going to absolutely come at me.
It is a confession.
It's not a confession. So the only thing which I... How do I phrase this so that you don't eat me up?
I know what he's going to say as well, by the way, ladies and gentlemen.
Obviously, you touched on it. The difference between our two cars, yours PDK, mine's manual.
Uh-huh.
So I absolutely still love the manual.
Yeah.
I don't regret the decision at all.
Good.
And for the 99.9% situations on my trip, it was the dream. I was loving it. The engagement was fantastic. But
perfect.
I was on a rally. And 25 cars, it means you get on the motorway. Everyone gives it large joining the motorway. Gets up to speed real quick. Mm. Every time I was joining the motorway, I was already just I'm cruising, you know. I'm in sixth gear coming off the roundabout. And then I'm like, oh. Doof, 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 doof. Bah!
Yeah.
The amount of times I was caught out because, or people on the motorway go, let's drop down to 30 and do a side-by-side up to 70.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or in Europe, it's up to 80. Good for you. So, and I was just like, I can't be arsed. So I kept, like, I think people got a bit annoyed by me because everyone wanted to, like, let's drag.
But
and
to your to your defense, I mean, we don't really do that anyway.
No. There's a big rally, like, you know, people were overexcited on the first day. Fair. I get it. Like,
but to your defense, why would you want to straight line a GT3? Because it's not fast in a straight. It's not what it's for. And it annoys me, the GT3 in a straight. It's a bit like when I had the Speciale. You can't shut the bloody thing up.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It cruises at 4,000 RPM.
Just revving its nuts off.
It's so aggressive. It's like,
annoying.
Yeah, yeah. Because in Europe, as I say, most motorways are 80, 85, something miles an hour compared to the UK 70.
Yeah.
And that really is like 4,500 RPM. Yeah. And it's singing at that point at GT3.
Yeah.
And you're
literally,
like,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But it's, you know, it's all worth it for a million other reasons. But yeah, but yeah, so that just, as I say, in those occasions, and really real life, situation there is like, okay, fine, you've got to go for a sudden overtake or you've got to suddenly react. But that's the same with all manual cars.
Yeah.
But I just think that's the thing with the GT3 is that really the power band is really 5,000-6,000 RPM.
It is, yeah. Five and a bit when the power really starts to come in, yeah.
It's kind of where you want to be. And when you're on the twisties, you end up just sticking in like second and third gear just to give it all the welly, don't you? Just to make sure that you've got that maximum power.
The thing for me, I mean, I absolutely no way I wouldn't buy a manual because of the way I drive and what I always drive with. Of course, I don't use my cars in the UK. I don't do what you do. I don't travel on my own. I go with a group of pals. It's a trip car, and then it goes back and I either sell it or I keep it for the next trip. So I could not have a manual for that reason, because it's hard enough as it is trying to keep up with a car, double the power and without ever having to change gear. And actually, I'll use the PDK to slow the car down. Obviously, I used to go down the gears and slow the car down
as well.
And obviously, short shifting out of corners and stuff. It's a pain in the arse in the manual.
You have more abilities to play with the engine and the power.
Yeah.
But I think I gain massively, as I say, in terms of engagement and reward on the twisties, but also on the slower stuff. And the memories like burned into my cordon and my brain of some of the roads through Luxembourg that we drove.
Yeah.
Some of them through the Black Forest towards the Nürburgring. Like, it's just like, boom. Like, I just absolutely was like, this car is the bomb. And, you know, funnily enough, we talked about it a bit, I think kind of off air, and at least with Paul, that, you know, since I drove that car to Austria, I haven't really touched it. And I've been a little bit like I'm a bit not worried, but thinking, is that car just going to end up being like the special occasion car, which I already got that. I've got the 360 and I was just a bit nervous, but oh my God, after the 3 days.
Change your mind again.
Oh, I'm obsessed. It's the best car in the world. I want to put back seats in it and keep it as the family car. This thing is just unbelievable. But we have to talk about my final destination of my trip, which was the Nürburgring.
Mm. So around.
I went around with I actually, in the lead up to it, I wasn't sure if I had the balls to do so.
Okay.
I don't like the Nürburgring.
Okay.
Not because of the ring itself, but because of the other people. I'm sure we've touched on this.
Yeah. I've done it many times and it's terrifying, especially if you've never done it before. It is terrifying, the Nürburgring.
It's the unpredictability of the other people, especially on a tallest day. I'm not going to say the German, what a tallest by the Boston Hall.
Yeah.
Where you get literally everyone from someone in their polo of VW Mark III convertible going around at 40 miles an hour to absolutely kitted out 1980s 318 eyes, just flat. Like, it's so, so overwhelming. And on top of that, you then got to remember the track and where to go.
Impossible to remember it.
So I was a little bit like, I kind of have to go. Like, if we're going to the Nürburgring, I've got a GT3. Like, I kind of have to do a lap. Like, how bad can it be? But then I was also like pooping myself, thinking I'll look for any excuse to not do it. And I thought I'd found an excuse, because on the Saturday, we got to the Nürburgring on the Sunday. On the Saturday, I was following one of the cars on the route.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
That's the sound of another sale on Shopify in store. Shopify POS is everything you need to sell in person. From payments to inventory, Shopify unites your sales into one commerce platform. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/retail23. shopify.com/retail23.
Ali, and we went through this, or went down this super, super stone-ridden road. And as I'm following, it was a Supra. I just see this rock flying off and smacks onto the left-hand side of my windscreen. Massive crack.
Really?
Instantly.
Straight away.
Massive crack. And I was like, oh. And as I'm going, oh, I see another rock. On the right-hand side, another massive crack.
Wow.
Both sides. I was like, oh my God. And at the time I was like, oh, you know, crack windscreen, not the end of the world. I woke up the next day being like, oh, it's just a nightmare. Like, I bet you if I call Porsche, they're going to be like, oh, sir, it's 6 months for a new windscreen. Like, I'm so sorry, production delays, whatever. Like, I just thought this is just a massive headache. But the silver lining was, maybe I don't have to go around the ring anymore. I was like, maybe I can just say, oh, sorry, guys, a damaged car, can't go around the ring.
Crack windscreen.
Came all this way. I can still do the YouTube title of taking my GT3 to the Nürburgring, just not driving around it. But as we made our way then, as we arrived, I was like, no, it should be done. And it was a big, the Green Hell Driving Days. It was a special weekend where basically all 3 days, Nürburgring was open for tourists.
Yeah.
So it was heaving, mate.
Yeah.
Like, heaving. And beautiful sunshine, blue skies.
It's a cool place. I like going there.
Oh, mate. It's the coolest place. Yeah. Like, a lot of the people on the Podium Tours rally hadn't been.
Yeah.
So we were sitting in the traffic to go up to the, you know, Devil's Diner and the start.
Yeah.
And I said, let's just bail. Let's just go to the Grand Prix circuit straight and get some food. And we parked up and sat down at a diner. Or not done a restaurant, sat outside and just car spot for like 2 hours. And everyone was like, this place is amazing. Yep. Saw a handful of 992 GT3 RSs.
Did you?
Yeah.
Going round?
A few of them going round.
Yep.
I saw a yellow one on the road and I saw a silver one on the track and another one on the track. Can't remember the spec of the other one. But
they literally look like a racing car, don't they?
Yeah, look insane. Insane. But what was mad, there was also racing cars going around, so pretty hardcore. But yeah, so saw a lot of the GT3 RSs. It's a lot. Yeah. Like, it's a lot. We saw a black one at Spa as well because we stopped off for the WEC at Spa. Let's earmark that and come back to that in a second. But it's an aggressive looking car. But yeah, so many other cars there. AMG GT Black Series, AMG GT3, like the actual race car was going around. Everything you can imagine. But yeah, geared myself up and got hold of Misha.
Yeah, fair.
YouTube Nürburgring King. Because he took me around for the first time I ever went around. He came on my passenger seat in the Carrera T and coached me around. And I actually loved the experience. He did it like a rally driver. Brake here, turn in, off the brakes, left, aim for this board, move to that board, come to the center. Like, and I just zoned out and I just listened to every word he said. And we got around the lap and I actually kind of enjoyed it.
Enjoyed it.
I thought, I kind of want him back. So I sent him a message. He said, yeah, of course, no problem at all. And I said, look, it's so busy. I'm really freaked out. And this car's way more powerful, way more capable than last, so just please just do the same thing, but just don't, like, if you know it's like flat with you behind the wheel, tell me to like do a slight lift. I don't want to be flat I just want to make it around and have a nice time. So he's like, okay, no problem, I'll just tell you where to brake. I was like, yeah, fair. So off we went, a busy old day, and you can see actually when you watch the footage back my confidence gaining throughout the lap.
Yeah, it will. Yeah.
I'm very steady at the beginning, and he reminds me that I'm on cold tires, which I remember when I go through a corner and I'm like, okay. But by God, that car is fantastic. However, I was slightly shown up when I came up behind a rather fast moving Suzuki Swift.
I mean, that is a little bit of a joke.
Oh my God. And I think it was kitted out, but I don't even know because on the footage, it's like rent me. It's like a renter car.
Yeah, it's probably a renting car. Yeah.
Honestly. And the thing was moving. And Misha's like, okay, overtake the Swift. And I'm like, ah. And he's like, okay, you can overtake the Swift. I'm like, I think I'm good. Like, he was going at enough of a pace, or she was going at enough of a pace that I was like, I'm happy just to sit back here. I'm honest. Like, three or four corners later, we caught him on the brakes and I was like, okay, right, just lunge. But my God, the stuff that's going really fast is the stuff you don't expect at the Nürburgring.
Mm.
I got done by this murdered out one series that, like, hatchback that, I mean, literally you would think it'd be dealing drugs on an estate in the UK.
Yeah.
Came flying past, like was bouncing through the corner in front of me. And I was like, oh my, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
But yeah, the GT3 was absolutely mind-boggling. First time I've ever put the car in track mode.
Right.
So I had it fully, you know, everything turned up, suspension on full whack, bumpy through the carousel.
It's very bumpy, yeah.
Gotta be honest. Yeah. And another time when, because I didn't know where I was going, I had so much to negotiate in terms of traffic, and I was trying to consume all the information Misha was telling me. definitely missed a few gears, like definitely like downshifts, which is again the manual PDK thing. I think if you're going
on track, you've got to have a PDK.
Well, if I'd known where I was going, I would have been all over it. But listening to what he's saying, which is literally bullet, like what's called bullet time. No, anyway, like rapid fire. There we go. Rapid fire rally driver notes whilst also negotiating traffic. And then not thinking, oh wait, I'm in fifth, I should be in third.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Well, obviously, if you're in a PDK, it's a bit natural, I suppose. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I'm not looking to go back, got to be honest.
Fair enough.
Didn't finish my lap and go, God, can't wait for the next one.
Yeah. The thing that when I first went to Nürburgring, I was absolutely terrified. I'd done loads of track, even back then, I'd already done loads of track driving. I was terrified of going around there. And then I figured out after a few laps that actually, the faster you go, the easier it is.
That's why I wanted Misha with me.
Yeah.
Because it was so busy. I was like, I don't want to spend my whole lap just looking in the mirrors and terrified.
Yeah.
And that's exactly it. We were going at enough of a pace that we were moving through the traffic.
Yeah.
And there were a few fast people that came up behind us, but they were easy enough to let go and maintain our pace. Where if I was alone, I would have just like scooted around.
So the fast people normally are the taxis, the ring taxis.
Yeah.
And the local lads that are in the fast cars, the Porsches, the Mercs and stuff like that, they'll always come past you because they're too fast. But actually, you're never in their way because they're so fast. They know every inch of the track.
Yeah, they'll just Clio come past Cup car that I didn't have to do anything.
Yeah. Like, but if you knew the track properly, you'd be going past him. Nürburgring is all about knowledge. So if you know the track, you can go around really fast in a Golf. Do you know what I mean?
As I said, like the one series that flew past me, like,
exactly.
My God.
Yeah. But that doesn't mean he'd be any good on a track. He just knows the Nürburgring. It's like you're going home every night and you know every inch of the road that you go home in every night. It's the same thing. The thing which really catches Nürburgring out is that the speed that you're going.
Yes.
People forget how fast, like, I don't know how fast you were going, but as you come out the pits, and I've seen it a few times, and I've done enough. Like, I know where it goes, but I still don't like, I'm not like Misha. He's done thousands of laps around there. But I've seen it before. Like, people come out the pits, they go down the hill, round the left, forget they've got cold tyres, and either go straight or they go in the barrier.
Yeah, well, we saw someone go straight.
Yeah. It's because the tyres are cold. But what you forget is, if you're in a fast car, you're doing 150 mile an hour there.
Yeah.
You forget how fast you're going.
That's exactly it. I mean, I don't think we did any ludicrous speeds from my camera. I think like we were topping out like 205, 210 kilometers and I was backing out. Like, yeah. I didn't want to be going too much faster than that. But there were plenty of sections where he's going like, go, speed's good. And I'm still like coming off it because I'm like, this is ridiculous. And that's the other thing as well is, when you know it, you know the ability of the car as well. That's the other thing where Misha's had so much experience in so many different cars. He can jump in the passenger seat and know what the car's capable of. Is that there were corners when I would have braked and shifted down two gears and he's like, keep going.
Yeah.
Just keep going. Like,
it,
you know, it's all about, yeah, as you say, riding the ring.
Yeah.
And it is, as you say, learning a great road. Hey, look, it's fun. It's a roller coaster. I always think, everyone should experience it.
Yeah.
But it's an intimidating and terrifying place, and especially in a car that, well, the bank lent you lots of money to buy. but no, all in all, I came away from my trip just going, I think that car is unbelievable. I wouldn't even know how to replace it. I wouldn't change a thing. I know I've gone in on the manual a couple of times here, which now everyone's going to be saying, I should have got PDK, but I'm not, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just highlighting like a few things. I don't want to change a thing.
Yeah, fair, because it was only highlighted because of what you were doing that particular weekend. Like you said, 99% of the time. The manual suits you completely fine.
Suits
because
me perfectly.
Of what you do, whereas me, it's the complete opposite.
Yeah.
I could not be in a manual at all.
Yeah. No, fair.
I'd have to be in a PDK.
You have to be in a PDK.
Yeah.
Well, I can't wait to get back in the car. It is now sitting in the south of France waiting for the next leg of its adventure with a cracked windscreen. So I'm really hoping that...
How many miles it done now?
Good question. I guess 6,000 odd kilometres.
Is that 4,000 miles?
Not quite. 3,500 miles. Like
I'll be very close to you.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I'm at... 2,600.
Got another
couple of hundred miles to go.
Can't be too far off. But I'm in desperate need of a new windscreen. So I'm hoping Centre Porsche Antibes answer my call because it's Thursday today and I've been calling them since Monday.
They're not a lot of money.
Well, they're not hard workers in Porsche Centre on Tees, I'll tell you that.
Oh.
It's about supply is my concern.
Oh, fair.
I'm worried they're going to say it's hard to get a hold of one.
No, but I think it's a normal 911 screen, mate.
Oh, wait, hold on a sec. One big thing which we didn't talk about, which I put on my stories, which I really wanted to discuss, oil. Have you had to top up the oil?
Not yet.
You're going to get a warning any second now.
I know, because...
Find some oil.
No, but it's fine.
Have you got some?
I've got some in the car.
Well
yeah.
done, yeah.
Yeah.
So that was my big mistake. So Russell from Porsche Guildford gave me oil when I collected the car and said, it's worth having this in. These GT3s drink oil.
They do.
And at some point, I was having to load the boot with loads of stuff and I took it out and I forgot to put it back in.
Yeah, they do use oil, yeah.
So on the way down from the Nürburgring to the south of France where I was dumping the car in storage before I did the 360 adventure, then go back and find it, I get this low oil warning, and not only am I in the middle of nowhere, I was like somewhere between Lyon and Cannes. It was a bank holiday in France. It was 6 p.m. UK time, so no one in the UK was like, I just had no one that I could call, nothing that I could do.
It's only asking you to top it up, mate. It will need like half a litre or
it
something.
It says 1 litre max.
Yeah.
And it's the 0W40, which in French service stations, impossible to find.
Yeah.
I know that I wanted to get into it because...
You could probably put 540 in though.
Well, yeah. So I asked the question, look, can I put anything else in?
Yeah.
Or like, how far can I go?
Because
as you say, like, it's only a little top up. It's the sort of the extra 1 litre in the top. I think somebody said the gearbox holds like 5 litres of oil.
The car will hold like 9 or 10 litres of oil. So it's just you wouldn't kill the car.
So that's the sort of first thing. But also, yeah, what are your opportunities? Because according to forums, but also I think Porsche dealers, it's like it has to be Mobil 1 and it has to be 0W40.
Okay.
So on the onboard, because I really went into this, on the onboard manual in the GT3, it says, yes, Porsche recommends Mobil 1. So I immediately read that as you can put any different make you want.
Yeah. You can, because I've done it before myself.
And in the manual, it says recommends 0W40, but on the actual oil filler cap, it has a big exclamation mark saying, has to be 0W40.
Right.
Now, this is not an area of my knowledge. So the zero or the number at the start is to do with temperature, right? It's the temperature that it can operate at. So the lower the number, the bigger the range or the bigger the cold temperature range that it can operate at. So zero
is still like, being thick and thin.
Exactly.
Basically, yeah.
And then the 40 is the more important part. So yes, theoretically, you should be able to put a 5W40, probably not a 10W40, but a 5W40.
Yeah.
A few other people were saying you could put a 0W50 or anyway.
Because it'll operate better in hot conditions, basically.
I just have to say, we are sitting by a big window and one of your SF90 lads drove past. It's a good looking car.
Because, I'll tell you why.
Oh, why?
Because when we pulled up, he was too lazy to take it round to the car park. So he just abandoned it outside.
Dumped it.
So now he's obviously been asked to move it. He's been for a spa, ladies and gentlemen. He's just dumped his SF90. And now he's been told to move it. He's now got to move
it. It's the SF90 life. But anyway, so yeah, back to oil. So yeah, people were sort of, I had so many mixed messaging about this. The other really important thing is in the manual, it says Porsche approved oil can be mixed. Because a lot of people were saying you have to have Mobil 1 and it has to be 0W40. Don't put anything else in. It's super dangerous. People were saying stop driving the car immediately, like blah, blah, blah. But also in the manual, it says if it's an orange or yellow light, just top up when you next can.
Correct.
If it's a red light, pull over safely.
If it's a red light, then it's really low.
Then you're really low.
You're in trouble.
So anyway, luckily, long story short, I managed to find some oil and figure it all out and it was fine. But it just opened up this can of worms of what are you supposed to do in that situation? Go against advice of the manufacturer. And also, these GT3s just tend to be or seem to be extremely thirsty when it comes to oil.
Because they're a performance engine. It's a cup car engine, mate. So it's a performance engine. So they do use oil. They always have done. All the GT cars I've had. But equally as well, I've had that situation before and I've put the next best thing oil in.
Because
there's only a top up.
Oil, at some point, oil's oil.
Oil is oil, yeah.
You can do an oil change, right?
You're only topping it up, mate.
And is that just a bit of manufacturer sort of pressure of, as I say, it says recommend. And obviously Porsche themselves are going to say, oh yeah, it must be Mobil 1. But
you know, the way I always look at it is as well, is people get these performance cars and they say, I've only ever put 98 running. Never put any other fuel in but 98. Well, let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. I only ever put 95 in my cars because sometimes in Europe, that's all you can get.
Yeah, on the smaller roads when you're up in the hills or the mountains.
That's all you can get. So it makes absolutely no difference. Is that, well, it's an extra, gives you an extra 2 horsepower. There's a power difference. I didn't notice it.
Better for the life of the longevity of the engine.
Okay, but I'm not going to have it in 25 years' time, so...
You don't care. It's bottom for the next
one. I'm sorry about that, yeah.
That's so aggressive.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's a bit of a weird one. I was getting a little bit aggy at a lot of the comments who were, you know, really like, this is how it is, because I feel like maybe we've all been conned. Like, I just don't... I feel like it's a sort of clever...
That's exactly what I think it's marketing. I genuinely believe... that 98 fuel and 95 fuel is marketing.
But what about oil? Because
I don't know about it. It's a
motorsport engine, you're right. It's a highly tuned, specific motorsport engine. Like, the last thing I want to do is mess it up by putting completely the wrong oil in and then find out that I've broken the engine.
But I'm sure you would if you constantly put the wrong oil in it all the time, but you're only topping it up.
It's a maximum 1 litre top up.
Maximum.
To get you, or at the time from SA Lucky, I found the right oil, but at the time, it would have been another 100 kilometres down the road, so then I could get it to a Porsche Centre where I could do an oil change.
If you really wanted to, yeah.
So I think in those situations, when it's low, just put something in and don't be so scared about what the label. We say that, maybe we'll have... I'll have a blown up GT3 engine at some point. But now I've known that. Now I know how hard it is. I'm just going to stockpile the stuff.
Yeah.
But
you just need a litre of oil in there.
I just need a litre of oil, yeah.
Literally.
I ended up having to find...
You know, you can, on the menu, you can check to see the level.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, but yeah. I didn't know that it was an issue. I should have remembered. I wasn't thinking.
Right.
And obviously, I've done up to 6,000 kilometres. I should have thought oil was going to go at some point. Yeah. Actually, the Performante had a low oil one, and that should have triggered my memory, but I just didn't really think about it.
Ferrari engines are very good on oil, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
Don't use them, yeah. Mm. I've never, ever, ever, all the Ferraris I've had, never had to put oil in them.
I've never put oil in the 360, to be honest.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well done, Ferrari.
I had to the way I found the 0W40 then was like some... backwards industrial estate, and it was like it wasn't even a shop front, it was like a mass parts. I typed into Google like oil for sale, and it was like a distributor.
Wow.
And I went and I paid him cash. Fair. Just for one thing. Good.
Lovely.
Jean-Pierre is called. How cliched.
Was it really Jean-Pierre?
Yeah, Jean-Pierre. Because he gave me his card because he got like clock, obviously, like So, yeah, I touched on it. Let's cycle back. WEC at Spa.
Amazing.
So this was my first chance to see the new era of hypercar racing. Porsche, Ferrari, Toyota.
They're racing?
Mate, racing the 6 hours.
Wow.
So we got there. Now, I don't know about you, but whenever I arrive at a racetrack.
Love it.
Mate, for a race weekend.
Yeah.
Because in advance, I was like, yeah, it'd be cool to see the hypercars, but I wasn't like buzzing. But then arriving at Spa, all the traffic, I could hear the cars. I was like, oh! But mate, it was 5 degrees, 6 degrees max, and raining.
Crash.
At the start of the race.
Crash?
Mate, all the crashes.
Yeah. All the crashes.
So we positioned ourselves at the end of the Kemmel Straight. So the top of Eau Rouge, Kemmel Straight, and then Lacombe, the first chicanes. I was like, this would be a good place to watch the start. So I don't know, and I have to familiarise myself, because I watch Le Mans, but I don't really watch much more of the WEC or any other endurance races, really.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't watched a lot this season, so I don't know, but they seem to do endless formation laps, maybe because of the temperatures, or just that's how it works. It's a rolling start.
Yeah, it's always rolling start, yeah.
So the first formation lap, the Toyota, I think, was in pole. Was it the Toyota? Yeah, Toyota in pole. Go straight. At the Lacombe, just go straight.
Really?
On the formation lap. And I was like, oh, we're in for some fun here. Mate, every third or fourth car, straight into the gravel, spinning, going wide. I was
really?
Like, this is chaos. And those new era hypercars coming out of Lacombe, trying to find grip and seeing these things squirm. I know you love a racing driver. I was suddenly like, oh my God, you are the coolest people in the world. But what was mind boggling, and the quickest way to make anyone look like a chump. Anyway, hypercars come through. You know, a few people went wide. You get down, like LMP2 again. Get to the GT class. You know, you got Vantages. You got 488s. What are 488s doing still racing in WEC, by the way?
It's got to be 296s soon, surely.
Honestly, they look like the most awkward gentleman race. They all binned it. Everyone crashed. there were 911s in the gravel. There were people touching each other. Like, none of them could make it through the corner.
They weren't the pros.
What it confuses me out. I think it's just GTAM, isn't it? Is there a pro?
So
I get so confused by the new.
Is it the pro ams or just the amateurs? Is there pro ams?
I don't know.
But they're similar.
Whoever they were, mate, they looked useless.
A pro am is just a quick am, basically. It's not pro.
So let's look at the categories. But as I say, it doesn't really matter because I'm sure some of them were super legit racing drivers. In these conditions, they all look like complete novices.
Yeah, fair.
And the mind-boggling thing is once they did get up to speed, these hypercars, mate.
They're so fast, aren't they?
Fly.
Yeah.
And you could literally sit and you could see it. So
they wouldn't be far off an F1 car then.
Yeah, not that far. Not I mean, that far. You know, but anyway, so they're flying and loads of grip and they would come through Lacombe and they were tentative, but they were fast. By the time you get to the GT cars, literally like they're braking so far in advance and they're sitting through the corners, waiting, and then just tentatively.
Yeah,
like trying to put the power down and it just not working.
Yeah,
it was really, really cool to see. Okay, WEC family classes. So we've got the hypercar class, LMP2, and then LMGTEAM.
Well, AM means AM.
So the GTAM category came into being in 2011 and includes road racing cars derived from street models. Category includes professionals and amateur driver lineups.
Wow.
So that's the new category, LMGTAM. But yeah, really, really cool to see. Made me very excited for Le Mans. Loud as hell, the Cadillac hypercar is the loudest thing I've heard in my life.
Is it?
Like, so cool. But yeah, like proper racing, you know what I mean? Fair. Proper racing, proper skill.
Yeah.
And a category which maybe has been a little bit in the doldrums for a few years with Toyota's cleaning up. And they're still cleaning up because they've got a march on everyone. But you've got recognizable teams, cool. Like, it's very... And everyone that went was like, that was very cool to see. So I highly recommend trying to get down to a WEC race.
It's weird, Spa, as well, because it's got... It has its own weather climate.
Mm-hmm. Microclimate.
Microclimate, yeah. Similar to Nürburgring, but... Spa is like terrible for it.
Well, you know, always wet and raining.
Basically. Yeah, literally. Yeah,
makes it dramatic though. Makes it super dramatic. But yeah, I mean, would you care? Would you support a team if you went to WEC, or you wouldn't care?
No,
you just watch the action.
Yeah,
I was behind Ferrari. I couldn't help but
was not. You?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I probably would look. Well, I wouldn't support the team. I just want to see the race.
Great. They look super cool.
Yeah. Was there any Porsches there?
Yeah, but they didn't. They're not doing that well.
No GT3s. Any GT3s?
Oh yeah, then the GT stuff. But there's Porsche hypercars, bro.
Right.
Porsche in the hypercar class. And that there's the Singer one, and there's Porsche themselves.
They always used to be the quickest. The Porsches.
Yeah, they're not. They're used not doing mega. Since they've come back. They're not doing great.
Wow.
I think they're doing quite well in IMSA. The American Endurance Championship. Right. But in WEC so far, maybe I'm wrong, I think they have stolen the odd podium by mistake, but just on pure pace, they're not really there.
Right.
It seems to be Toyota, Ferrari and Cadillac, and then Porsche.
Right.
Which isn't great.
Not really, yeah, because they're normally good.
Well, imminently, we've got 100 years of Le Mans and 75 years of Porsche all at the same weekend.
Oh, dear.
So I'm assuming they want to do something... good for that.
If they've not got a fast car, they won't be able to do anything.
Did you know that there's the big unveiling that weekend?
No. What unveiling? What?
Now, we'll touch on this. This will finish out our episode. If we're talking about our love of GT3s and our amazing week, we can talk about potentially a new Porsche coming that we're going to want. So, can I say that? Yeah, I'm going to say it. I've been invited to an event in Stuttgart, not in Stuttgart, but in Germany, June 8th or 9th. For the celebration of 75 years of Porsche and the unveiling of a special model.
A new hypercar.
And it's all been rumoured and spoken about. Lots of dealers have now been notified. Lots of big collectors have been notified. I can't remember if it's the 8th or the 9th. It's the same date that the first ever Porsche 356 rolled off the production line stamped as a Porsche. And obviously a few days before Le Mans, which is the 100 years of Le Mans. And obviously Porsche winning, et cetera, et cetera. So... the obvious answer is it's the ST, the long-rumoured ST, which is essentially a 911R, a street-going GT3 RS. That's the obvious answer. But rumors are now going sort of crazy with the thought that could it be something more special than that? Is an ST special enough? Given the significance of all of these different anniversaries coming together, could we be seeing the start of, yes, the 918 successor, the next hypercar from Porsche, which, yeah, a lot of people say, and, you know, again, people have been kind of rumoring for a while with all those Porsche design concepts that came out weirdly. When was that, 18 months or 2 years ago? Why did that happen? Was it so that they could gauge interest from customers? Who knows?
And what about that test mule that's going around Nürburgring, which is a GT3 RS body? It's got a turbo engine in it.
Well, and it's got turbo inlets, doesn't it? It has the turbo inlets. So, yeah, theoretically a 2 RS coming, maybe.
But that's early.
Very early. It's usually the 0.2. It's usually the generation. So there's something going on, and there's something coming. It's either going to be uber exciting or a little bit disappointing. But they're building up to something. So yeah, that weekend should be quite an exciting weekend one way or another.
Interesting.
Watch this space.
Watch this space.
Get your deposit down now. Anyway, so we're going to wrap things up for this episode. As I say, brought to you from our very glamorous hotel room in Spain. I say, it's not our hotel room. We're not sure. Tony's got a room on a different floor.
I've literally got it on a different floor.
And it's a suite. No, it won't surprise you. I'm in the cheapest room available and he's in the suite. And we're now going to go for a very nice dinner, which he's going to refuse to pay for. But that sums up our friendship. But yeah, hopefully you enjoyed the episode. We're going to be recording another episode, actually, a sort of bonus episode. I'm not entirely sure when that's going to be going out. It may be next week, but we'll just have to wait and see because we're trying to work out our future plans. But there is a big Q&A episode coming soon, so stay tuned for that. Obviously, if you want to check out After the Checkered Flag, my special series with Paul Wallace, that's available over on recast.tv/behindtheglass. In the meantime, if you want to follow Tony and see what he's up to whilst we're away or whilst I'm away, he's at Tony Grewald Car Sales on most social media platforms. And for all my adventures, I'm at Seen Through Glass. So yes, we'll be back with you next week, either for another episode from this hotel room or potentially an episode from Monaco. We are so international, I can't bear it. See you soon. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.